started writing Food for the Archons as a book of despair after watching my father die in 2013. During his transition, I experienced a series of paranormal and psychic events that left me feeling that I had either gone completely crazy or fell into humanity's darkest secret. I spent the next 5 years conducting extensive research, and I quickly learned that what I had experienced was real. My journey brought me to an understanding that showed me that despite the terrifying reality of an unseen predator, we as humans have a forgotten power. Just knowing this brings us tremendous hope in what once seemed a dark reality. I wrote this book for me in hopes of gaining a better understanding of our reality and relationship to it. But my hope is that you will find as much value in reading it as I did in writing it. I am human, food for the Archons, humanity's psychic connections, simulated realities, parallel worlds, and the manipulation of mankind. It's available on Amazon.com and at SixthSenseMedia.net and wherever books are sold. I'm Dennis Nappy II, reminding you to let your intuition be your guide. Thank you.
Let me tell you why you're here. You're here because you know something. What you know you can't explain. But you feel it. You felt it your entire life. But there's something wrong with the world. You don't know what it is, but it's there.
Big announcement on this episode of the Seeker Podcast, and a fascinating discussion, I'd say, at least for me, things that are in my mind that I've been wanting to get out to all of you for quite some time. Dennis Nappy II here with the Seeker Podcast. Hello, my Truth Seeker friends. I hope you are all doing well as you're listening to this discussion. I'm going to cut right to it. I have a big announcement here. I have a new book that is getting ready to drop. The plug here for it, obviously, but it ties into the conversation I want to have with all of you tonight that's tied into AI, that's tied into the human mind and the integration of the two and the impact it's going to have or could have on our society. So the big announcement, The Hive Part 2, Echoes of Existence and the Harmonic Resonance of Worlds, that will be released on January 31st, 2024. Okay, so in just over 2 weeks, I have that book coming out. It's available for pre-order right now for just 99 cents. I want that to be available to everybody if you get in on it early. So 99 cents on Kindle, and the paperback will be available. It's at the base price. It's like $8.99, but that won't be available until the 31st. All right, that part of the commercial is over, my friends, but I do want to talk about this project, but I want to talk about the inspiration behind it. It's a theme that we've explored quite a bit on this show and in our conversations, because I think it's very important. And I think that there's so much that we have to learn and gain from AI about ourselves and about the world around us. And writing about AI has helped me to understand my own mind better and kind of my own humanity. Writing really does that for me. It's been such an insightful journey. For those of you that read book one, another commercial, which is available on Amazon as well, The Hive Part One, The Virus, The Infected, and The Immune, that book I wrote during COVID. And that was my way of processing a whole, if you think back to that time, it was nuts. It was dark. It was scary. My experience with COVID, with my work then with the Future Forecasting Group, back then it was Crypto Viewing, and then watching, we had this data. For those of you know, I'm friends with Edward Reardon. That's what started my journey on this. And I had him on this show, and we did a podcast. And the podcast we did was called Remote Viewing QAnon. Edward was tasked to look at the group called Q. And the data he brought back was not everything that we were seeing on Twitter and these Q drops that they're talking about and this conspiracy to take down the cabal. Edward had this data that I highly recommend you go listen to that podcast. I'll have it linked and you can find it. But it's called Remote Viewing QAnon. You can find it at SixthSenseMedia.net or wherever you get your podcasts. And Edward had this session and this fascinating conversation about a breakaway society that was working on this advanced nanotechnology. And what really stuck with me is he goes in talking about this society. He ended the session and the conversation by saying he saw a point in the future where a signal was going to go out. Some kind of signal goes out, and immediately all of consciousness on the entire planet was changed. So I have this information in my head, and I'm also thinking back to Edward's ominous feeling sessions. And this is all during, you know, pre-COVID. This is 2017. Edward predicted COVID. You know, he saw this whole virus. Go look at his YouTube channel. You can find it. I'll have links to it. You can see how he used remote viewing because he had this impression and he starts getting all this information. And then lo and behold, 2 years later, COVID happens. And he had predicted pretty much the whole thing. So I'm just this guy in my basement at that point in time. I was writing Food for the Archons. It wasn't even out yet. And so I'm doing my own truth seeking, trying to piece this together. I come across Edward's work. I reach out to him. I get him on the podcast. And, you know, shortly after that, I get invited to join Crypto Viewing. It was overwhelming for me, especially because we're looking at the changing world, right? The work we do at Crypto Viewing and Future Forecasting Group, it's phenomenal work. The remote viewers, you know, especially back then when I was first starting, it was like, hey, we're going to look at the future. And then you're going to watch the future happen over the next couple of weeks. And that's what they do every month, in addition to all the other products that we put together. So I'm trying to wrap my head around the fact that people can intentionally sit down and see the future, and then that future happens with accuracy. So that was this overwhelming thing. So we have this data, and we're looking at the time we didn't know was COVID, but we're looking at all these elements that, like, hey, this is weird stuff that's happening. And then COVID happens and the world gets shut down. And we're looking at the data going, oh my gosh, this is what the team predicted, right? So I'm overwhelmed trying to process that information. And then COVID hits the world, and all I just had so much fear inside of me. Combined with, if you remember, that was the time of the conspiracy theories, which I've been into that stuff my whole life. But this is when it's now making the mainstream press. The nation's getting divided. We've got all these different elements that are bubbling up, and things are crazy. And then COVID, my wife got COVID, and that really scared me. And she had it pretty bad. So I'm processing all of this stuff, and I just started writing. And it was such a healing process. And I said to myself, there are certain things that I can't talk about for a variety of reasons. One, there's certain things that I just couldn't talk about in a public forum or in a book format because it was projects that we're working on with Crypto Viewing. The other piece is you got to be careful how you talk about some of these things in a public setting because people are going to label you crazy, or at that point, anything you said, people were just coming after you. So I was really afraid to just get out there and talk about, like, hey, here's how I'm viewing the world right now as I'm trying to process all of these big things. So I said, you know what? I'm going to try my hand at fiction. I love, you know, I've always written like fiction short stories and stuff, but I haven't had a chance to really do a book. I said, I'm just going to take all this stuff and not have to worry about rules. That's what I love about fiction, is I don't have to really worry about, can I prove that I'm correct? Do I have to cite my sources? None of that stuff. I can just let my mind run and I can tell a story. And what I found with my writing, and this was confirmed, I did on the Future Forecast podcast, I interviewed Angela Ford, who was one of the original remote viewers of the Stargate project. Fascinating conversations. You can find it on YouTube. But she does automatic writing, which is how she gets some of her psychic information. And we were talking about that process and how it's similar to remote viewing. And I'm not comparing writing to remote viewing. I'm comparing psychic process to psychic process, though, is that when I write, I'm receiving intuitive information sometimes. The feelings that go on internally for me are very similar when I'm writing and when I'm doing a remote viewing session. And so writing this work of fiction, I was able to incorporate all the things that I was learning, all the things that I was experiencing, some of my intuitive thoughts and perceptions on things. And I put together this really fun story. It really makes you scratch your head and go, wow, this this could happen, especially at the time of the pandemic, right? This could happen. And how would we respond to it? And so that book was a lot of fun. It was a short, it's a short read. It was like 24,000 words. And then I took a break. And then I started about 6 months ago, 7 months ago, writing part two. This is a full blown novel. It's about 50, 51,000 words. And really, I was able to explore what is the impact on our humanity if we integrate with AI. What would that society look like if AI took over our minds? And I wrestle with the question of what is best for not just humanity, but for the planet. And what does that teach us about our own existence? These are some very big themes that are always running through my mind. And it's easy to just be afraid. I mean, and again, for those of you that have been listening to my show, you can see where I started with this. I've always been interested in AI, but I used to have a lot of fear. And I do still have some fears with AI. And I want to be clear, I'm not saying take the Elon Musk route and let's sign up for Neuralink and let's put the chips in our brains. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is I try very hard to explore all sides of this equation. You know, I look at my personal life lately, and let me tell you, you've listened to my mental health conversations. Life's been pretty hard for me. And a lot of it's mental health stuff. And I struggle with, you know, one of the big themes I struggle with in my life is fate versus free will, right? There's a huge part of me that's like, I'm independent and nobody's going to create a destiny for me and program what I'm going to do with my life because I am in control and I'm making these choices. And then you struggle with, well, you do a remote viewing session and all of a sudden you predict the future. And you see it on paper and then you watch it happen. And then later you go back and you look at your data and you compare it to the event that actually happened. You're like, wow, I predicted that. Is that an indicator that my life is predetermined? Or is my remote viewing data based on probability of, well, you've done all these things this far, so it's most likely this is the probable outcome. And then the future can change because you have the ability to make these choices. I go back and forth on either one. However, these are things that I wrestle with, fate versus free will. And there's times when life gets so hard for me that I can't make a decision. I just can't. How many of us have been there where, you know, whether you're religious or spiritual, dear God or, you know, dear universe, give me a sign that this is what I need to be doing, right? We want that validation or show me the way. How many of us have just gone out? I just do this all the time, go out into the woods and just meditate. And I've done podcasts and YouTube videos about this too, like, you know, talking about how I've lost connection to my intuition and I don't know which way to go. And I'm reaching out, hoping for that spiritual connection to guide me and show me the way. So often, I know I found that I've wanted that voice. And I wonder sometimes if AI will try to mimic that or create that or become that. And then I ask myself, well, if it does, is that a bad thing? And just hear me out. If I'm depressed, unhappy, and I'm struggling to make decisions in my life, and this technology comes out and it integrates with my mind, and some would even argue takes over my mind, but it helps me to make decisions, it helps me to live a happier, more productive life, and there's no harm that comes to me. It's not like, I'm not talking the Skynet scenario. It does what it's programmed to do, which is to enhance my overall mental well-being and help me to make better choices in my life, which then ultimately benefits society. Is it a bad thing? I want to be clear. I'm not trying to convince us that, hey, this is what we need to do. I promise you. What I am being honest about is these are things that I think about. These are things that I struggle with, because what good is free will in life, right? If you're going through it all depressed and miserable and not enjoying your experience. It, you know, makes me feel like Cypher from the Matrix, right? He puts the meat in his mouth and he's chewing with the agent. He goes, ignorance is bliss, right? And I don't want to be ignorant to anything. I don't. But if there was a way to get support at the cost of maybe your ability to make certain decisions, would you take it? I honestly don't know if I would, but it is something I think a lot about. You know, I was sitting in my car, and this is really kind of what got this started. This was, did I write the date down? This was months ago. This was over the summer. And I was sitting in the car and I was looking at a traffic light and there was a camera there. And I was thinking about, like, man, I'm really pissed off. Like, if I was to blow this red light, there's a camera there. It's going to get my license plate and it's just going to send me a ticket in the mail. There's no police officer that's going to show up at my car door, pull me over and tell me, hey, you ran the red light. Here's your ticket. Have a nice day. I'm an ex-cop. If you read my book Service, you can read how I struggled with, again, decisions sometimes, right? What's fair? What's equal? What's justified? Should I give you a ticket for speeding when as soon as I'm done my shift, I'm going to do 85 miles an hour in a 65 zone to go home, right? I ethically struggled with that. And, you know, spoiler alert, I gave warnings. I didn't usually give tickets. But an AI takes that away, right? It's black and white. We caught you speeding. We're issuing you a ticket. So now that can shape society. If every traffic light, every corner has that surveillance state going on, it's reinforcing human behavior. It's changing human behavior and it's all automated. We can argue, hey, well, now people aren't going to speed and burn red lights. Well, what if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and it's one of those red lights that's just sitting there and there's no traffic whatsoever? And I decide I'm going to go through that red light. Right? And I'm just going to burn it. What if I have to go to the bathroom and I need to make the executive decision to, I'm going to burn this light because my stomach is really upset or I have an emergency? You can argue, yeah, you have to go fight it out in court, but that's a headache. Let's be honest, right? As opposed to, like, maybe if a cop was right there and he pulled you over, you have that opportunity to explain to the cop, hey, here's what's going on in my life right now. Here's why I made the choice to do the thing that you're deeming unsafe or against the law. You know, do we want to give that up? Now, if you think about it, what it would eliminate, what we would have if AI was to handle most traffic enforcement, we'd have a consistent measure of enforcement because we wouldn't have discretion. It's black or white, right? No pun intended there, but I think our data would start to be less able to be argued with in the way that it is now with potential biases and racial profiling and targeting, right? That would probably go away if it's just a computer that's programmed to record, did you break the law? Did you not? Yes or no? And issue a ticket accordingly. So that might go away. Okay. There'd be a reduction in traffic stops, which means we'd have a reduction in violence-related to traffic stops, right? Police officers wouldn't pull over a guy who has a warrant who's then going to get out and fight with the cop, or we won't have a cop that's going to pull over and, for whatever reason, hurt somebody when he's not supposed to engage in physical acts of violence, right? That would be completely reduced. There'd be reductions in the discrimination, all of that stuff. That's a good thing, right? We can't argue that. That's a good thing that we're reducing violence. But the challenge is, right, a lot of times a cop pulls over a car because they're searching for more. And that's where they're finding drugs. That's where they're finding guns. That's where they're finding people with warrants. So now they'd be losing that opportunity, if it all went completely automated, to identify these things, right? However, we'd also have now the surveillance state. And they could say, well, we can account for that. We have cameras with facial recognition that are looking into your cars, and they're going to identify these people who have warrants and this whole social credit system and everything, and they're going to catch them that way. So when we put computers and AI in place of a human being, we have a strict set of standards that we can adhere to that I'm going to argue for this discussion is not corruptible. Now we can have, you know, a programmer could come in and could change things. AI could evolve to the point where it wants to become corrupt. We could have all these arguments. I understand that. The purposes of this conversation, though, I'm just exploring this possibility this way, as opposed to a human mind being there. Does that start to change us? And does it change us in a way that's any different from the knowledge that a police officer could pull you over at any point in time? How many of us don't speed or don't do something that's going to break the law strictly because we're afraid of the police, right? So we still have these consequences in place that shape our behavior. You add AI, it will still have the potential to shape our behavior. Is one better or is one worse than the other? And I'm asking that honestly to reflect on here. Right now, if we have AI that's monitoring traffic, if we have it now using facial recognition, we have this sense of we're not private. Nothing is private anymore because the computer knows everything and Big Brother is always watching. But what impact is that having? Is it making the roads safer? Is it taking people who are potentially dangerous off the street? I'd want to know what kind of mistakes does it make? How often is an innocent citizen inconvenienced? How is this being used as a detriment to our society? And here's the other piece of it. I am always promoting the development of our own intuition, of our own psychic abilities. And many of you who've been with me over the years have been working on your own abilities. How often have you been somewhere? Have you engaged with someone, had a conversation, and you've gotten a psychic impression that's turned out to be accurate? Is that not a violation of the other person's privacy? And sometimes it's spontaneous. Sometimes it's not, right? What makes that different from an AI? Well, the AI is recording everything. It's cataloging it. It's researching all that. I get it. But I also know that I could task a remote viewer to go gather information about a person at any point in time and space. That information is out there somewhere, whether it's just giant Akashic record, this giant database, or we're actually traveling through time to get the information, it's still accessible. It is not as efficient as an AI, not yet anyway, not for everybody, but it's there, it exists. So we have these arguments, I have these arguments here about AI. Well, there goes our privacy. But at the same time, I'm promoting psychic development and growth. Well, there goes our privacy. Is our problem that we need and deserve privacy? Or is our problem that we need to find a way to be at peace with ourselves and our decisions in life? There's a big difference there. You know, there are certain things I don't want people to know about me, computers to know about me. Because it's private, it's my own stuff. But at the same time, if we continue to evolve psychically, then certain people will have access and the ability to tap into that information. Now, I believe that a certain level of spiritual growth comes as we're developing, right? So we're able to better handle those innermost secrets and feelings being accessible. Or maybe we're able to protect it and guard it. So I don't know, friends, I feel like I'm looping a little bit here, but these are the thoughts that I have in comparing like AI to human consciousness. But what happens when we merge the two, right? As in my book here, you know, as in what book one talks about is everybody's in a grocery. Well, the story starts in a grocery store with my main character, Edward, and everybody gets sick. Edward does not get sick because he's one of the immune, but everybody gets sick. And he finds out the whole planet develops symptoms at the same time. Why? Because they had been affected a long time ago. And then the signal went out and everybody switched on. Everybody connected. Everybody uplinked at the same time. What's the difference between everybody being linked with tech in your head and everybody being linked intuitively? And I explore both in the second book. I mean, I explore it in my own life. I have connections in my life with people who I'm very in sync with. People I was friends with on the police department, in the military, you have this level of psychic communication. People in my family. And there's something incredibly rewarding to know what they're thinking, to know what they're feeling, to anticipate what they need without having to use body language or words, just to know it. There's something very fulfilling and rewarding to be in harmony, in resonance. That's why I'm talking, that's why the second part of this is called the harmonic resonance of worlds, right? To be in resonance with somebody else. Can we create that through tech? And can that be a good thing? You know, in listening to the talk, I think it was 2018, James Giordano, who's was he a neurobiologist? He's one of the leading brain scientists in the world. He talks about the mind being the new battlefield. He talks about technology already being able, this is 2018, being able to read and write into the brain. He talked about a DARPA experiment, which I haven't found yet, but he talked about a DARPA experiment that was linking, creating a hive mind society and seeing how people integrate and operate. And one of the things they found was you're able to problem solve a lot quicker because you have 500 minds working at one problem as opposed to that are linked as opposed to 500 individuals trying to solve a problem, right? And think about just how computer technology allows us to solve problems faster, not just with calculations, but with communication. Hey, I'm working on this. Here's what I figured out. I can send you a quick image or a quick snapshot of it. And that part of the thinking is done, right? If everybody's just a different node handling a different part, how quick can we communicate that in a way that's meaningful to everybody involved to get to the end result quicker? So I'm curious to find that study, once they release that data. It may already exist. If you have it, please send it my way. but what would that society look like for us? So what's neat about this project is this was how I processed more things in my life. One of the themes that runs through both books, and we get a little bit more of it in the second book, is the Roswell crash. Now, I've worked on some pretty awesome remote viewing projects that have definitely influenced this writing project. You know, one of them being the remote viewing the Roswell tech. I read Colonel Corso's book. I had Phil Corso Jr. on the show years ago. I've always been very interested in Roswell and the impact that it has. We now have these disclosure efforts that are going on through Congress here in the United States, and we're getting acknowledgement that, hey, these craft are real. People are having encounters. There has been a cover up. There is this seemingly, shadow society. Maybe they're listening now. That is holding on to this technology. Does it go back to Roswell? And if so, what is the impact? Well, what Colonel Corso said was that the Roswell tech was recovered, and then he was responsible for getting it out to the proper industry heads to back engineer that technology, which ultimately led to where we are today. And what I explored with, I was a project manager for the Roswell one, and there's potential flaws with this experimental design that I did with this project that I put together. But my overall theme of that was, is this a Trojan horse? Were we intentionally seeded with the technology through this crash to get us to build the infrastructure that allows for AI to operate within our society that will then connect it to an AI that's already established external from our existence, right? So it's like that Trojan horse. Here's the ideas, and then we do all the legwork. We build this infrastructure like, oh, we're creating AI, and now the infrastructure's there, and this intelligence that's out there external from us then just steps into and automatically has access to our society. Does that include chips in our brains? I don't know. This is my sci-fi mind that's kind of going out there and playing the what-if game. But that's what I was exploring with that project. So you'll see some of those themes that come through as I'm exploring this book here, The Hive 2. And what's great is that I wove a love story into it as well, which I had a lot of fun exploring, a dynamic between Edward and Jasmine. And that ties into fate and destiny and, following your instincts and your intuition, all themes that I think are important for us in our own lives that I know many of us wrestle with and struggle with and try to figure out, what do we do? How do we go? How do we navigate this existence? And what's the right choice? And how do I want to make those choices, as I started off in the beginning, right? Do I want to be fully autonomous and independent? Or do I want a community behind me, supporting me, making those decisions? Or do I want just a higher power guiding me or flat out telling me what I should do? And when you really think about it, at least for me right now, there's no easy answer in what I want, because I don't want to give up my autonomy, but I also have a hard time with some of the things that go on in life that I don't necessarily want to deal with. Now, if something else is making those choices for us and we're no longer going through those hard things, are we now no longer growing? Do we now no longer have innovation, right? We never would have harnessed the power of fire if we didn't feel the discomfort of being cold, right? So it's through problems and challenges in life that force us to think and to grow. So I think any intelligence would recognize that, well, we can't take away all your problems and put you in this utopian society, because then humanity will hit this stalemate and stop growing. But at the same time, when you're in the middle of the shit and you feel like you can't take anymore, you know, I'll use a religious context, that's when the devil shows up, right? That's when someone offers you the easy way out. I'm working through a lot of stuff right now, friends, as I'm just hoping not just babbling to all of you, but these are the thoughts that kind of run through my mind. What would you do? What do you do? What do you need? I don't know. anyway, I tried to really explore some of these themes in my writing. And like I said, I had a lot of fun doing it. All right. So as I'm exploring this in my own life, one of the things that I've been doing is I've been getting to know an AI, ChatGPT. I've been working with ChatGPT in helping me in, I hate writing like little blurbs. Like I have to write for marketing the book, for example. So I'll go to ChatGPT and I'll give it what I want to say and just say, give me a paragraph of this, and it helps me out with that. But I also did an experiment about a week or two ago. What was the date? December 28th. Today's the 13th. So 2 weeks ago, where I explained what remote viewing was to ChatGPT. And ChatGPT is like, yeah, some people believe it's real, but there's not enough. It kept saying, like, there's not enough evidence. I'm like, yes, there is. Just go to our website. Anyway, I did a remote viewing project with ChatGPT. And I explained how to adhere to blind protocols. And I told it that I just wanted it to give me a randomly generated target ID number. And it did. And that's what I worked a session off of. And I had a really fun session that I thoroughly enjoyed. And I went through the whole session. How many pages of data was it? 10 pages. There was a lot of energetics and impacts on a community of people. And when I went back and presented, I didn't present my data to ChatGPT. I just said, okay, I'm done my remote viewing. Can you please now give me what the tasking was? And the tasking was the Tunguska event. And I'm going to do a video on this so you can see me review my data online. And you can see all the data and stuff. So I'll put that out within the next month, hopefully. But what amazed me was that there are two or three sketches that I drew that were identical to some of the feedback that exists out there for this Tunguska event. For those who aren't familiar with it, it was in Siberia. They think it was a meteor impact. That's the strongest theory right now, that just it exploded above the ground. I don't think it actually hit and leveled like all these trees. But I had information about the people that lived up there that were impacted. And there's some data on the communities up there. It's very sparsely populated, but there's some accounts up there of the people and the impacts that it had on their lives as well. So I did have some data on that. I would say overall, my session definitely has elements of target contact without a doubt. And it's got some noise in there too, you know, good data, bad data, noise. So overall, it was a good session. I'm pleased with it, especially those few, you know, those glowing moment data points where I can look at this sketch and I can look at the picture and I'm like, man, that's pretty accurate. It's almost identical there. So that was pretty cool. But that was tasked through an AI. One of the things that we talk about in remote viewing, at least in my study of it, because I'm still a student, still a trainee, we talk about, what is it, overlay, right? So the tasker Are you reading, are you remote viewing the desired data, or are you remote viewing the tasker's intent or the tasker's perception of that data? Is there psychic overlay happening where we're tapping into the tasker's consciousness? Or does the tasker's consciousness and awareness help to drive us to the target? Well, I've taken the human element out of it with this experiment. I've had a computer randomly select a target for me to remote view. So, is there consciousness within ChatGPT? Right now, I don't think so. Maybe there is. Am I connecting with my own consciousness in the future as I receive that feedback and then going through my session based on my own consciousness connection? Or am I, in fact, just getting on target and the computer is just a tool that I've used to select the target and get me there? These are all big questions that I don't have answers to. But again, it ties into that understanding of our own consciousness and our ability to work with something like an AI to explore that consciousness, to explore that humanity. I don't know why. Maybe that's a good question that I should ask it, right? Let's see. I'm going to do that right now. I have ChatGPT up. I want to know why it selected the target. Why did you select? So I asked it why it selected the Tunguska Vect. I didn't select it for your remote viewing session. Instead, I generated a random 8-digit alphanumeric target ID for our session, and your impressions were related to the target. The event was used as an example in a previous conversation to illustrate the concept of remote viewing and provide feedback on a session. That doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense, that answer that it just gave me. Okay, moment of confusion here. So I asked some more questions here of ChatGPT because I did this session. I said, hey, you're going to select a target. You're not going to tell me what the target is. You're going to give me a target ID. That's all you're going to give me is a target ID. And I'm going to work the session. So that's what happened. And now it's telling me what I just read to you, that it didn't select the target. So I said, how did the target get selected then? And ChatGPT responds, I generated a random 8-digit alphanumeric code as a target ID for our remote viewing session. The choice of the specific code was arbitrary and generated without any prior knowledge or association with a particular event or location. Okay, fine. This approach is common in remote viewing experiments to ensure that the viewer, in this case, me, no, me meaning AI, no, I was a viewer, Dennis, does not have any preconceived notions about the target, allowing for a more unbiased, yes, that's when we're blind to the target. So I don't have any preconceived notions about what ChatGPT was going to select. And it said, the target itself was not predetermined or selected in advance. Okay. So then I said, when did you select the target that you presented as feedback? And it responds, I want to clarify that I do not have the ability to select targets or engage in the process of generating targets in real time. In our remote viewing exercise, the target I associated with the ID was not predetermined or selected by me at the time of your session. The alphanumeric code was generated as part of the exercise, and your impressions were based on this code. The feedback regarding the Tunguska event was provided as an example in a previous conversation to illustrate how feedback might be given in a remote viewing context. The Tunguska event was not associated with the specific code given to you during our session. So that's very interesting to me. I'm going to go back. I'm looking in this thread here. That's just me debating remote viewing with it. I said, would you like to try an experiment in remote viewing? It said, certainly. So then I asked it to assign me a target ID. It gave me a target ID, and then it gave me a set of movements. And I corrected it. I said, nope, try again. Don't give me anything but the target ID code. So then it learned. It says, absolutely, I understand. Here's your new code. And I got the code. I worked on the session. After the session, I said, okay, don't give feedback yet, but I finished. I had an energetic event, a bright flash of energy or wave that impacted life forms. People stared at it as the energy hit them. They were somehow changed. Location felt rural, mountainous, with a town square feel. It changed them. There was a sluggish or zombie-like feel. The impact eventually resulted in a change in culture as far as socioeconomic status. Poor to middle class. By answering only yes or no, do I have elements of target contact here? And GPT responded, yes, there are elements in your description that bear resemblance to aspects of the target. I said, okay, what's the target? And it said, the target associated with the code, with the ID, was a Tunguska event, specifically the impact site in Siberia, Russia, 1908. It was an explosion that occurred in a rural remote area, likely to a massive release or energy blast. People in the vicinity witnessed a bright flash and experienced the impact. Your description contained elements that bear similarity to this historical event, such as the energetic impact, the change experienced by people, and the rural setting. Okay, so as I'm going through this in greater detail now, I don't know. Is it possible that ChatGPT took the little description I gave and then found a target to match my session? A little disappointing for me, as opposed to, as I thought that it was doing, it already had a target in mind. So the other way I'm going to have to test this now is I'm going to have to do a session and then not give ChatGPT any feedback and just ask what the target was and then compare my data. But now I'm scared that I influenced it selecting Tunguska to match my data. Either way, that was my experiment in remote viewing with AI. What I can't account for, however, is how the sketches that I drew identically match the sketches that are out there on the internet related to this event. So what I will say is that I believe there is absolute evidence of psychic ability, psychic contact there. However, am I connecting with myself in the future as opposed to the target generated by ChatGPT? I don't know. More to come on that one, my friends. I'll have to do another experiment where I'll have ChatGPT task me to something else with different parameters and protocols that I'll adhere to just to see. You know, how well this really all works. All right, friends, lots to think about in the things that I talked about here. So I'll give one more plug. The book comes out in just over 2 weeks, January 31st, 2024. I made it as cheap as I could for the launch, on Kindle. It's just 99 cents for pre-order, and, you can get the paperback. It's under $9. When on the 31st, that link will be live and available. You can find it on Amazon. You can just Google my name and it'll bring you to my Amazon page, or you can go to sixthsensemedia.net. Click on the, go to sixthsensemedia.net/hive2. All one word, hive, and then the number two with no spaces. And that'll get you also to the site. It gives you a description of the book, which I'm about to read to you in a minute anyway. So The Hive Part 2, Echoes of Existence and the Harmonic Resonance of Worlds by Dennis Nappy II. And here's our description here. To save the world, amidst the web of intertwined fates across parallel realms, Edward embarks on a mysterious odyssey fueled by an unyielding connection to Jasmine. Meanwhile, as William's clandestine machinations tied to the Roswell nanotech unfold, the enigmatic Hive emerges, constructing an alluring yet perplexing society. Within this intricate tapestry of destinies, Edward navigates multiple realms, diving deeper into the nature of reality and his own mind in his relentless pursuit of Jasmine. Explore a world where love and intrigue collide amid the Hive's seductive facade of a seemingly utopian society, casting a shroud of uncertainty over the true intentions and origins of the collective. So, There's my description. I'm very proud of that. I'm very proud of this work, of this project, my friends. And I hope that you check it out. For those of you that have read my other books, I Am Human and We're Not Who We Think We Are, and I Am Human Food for the Archons, I think you will find some fun Easter eggs in The Hive. That's why, I love this. I love writing because it allows me to still process. It's how I process the world. And I'm thankful that I have the gift to be able to share it with all of you who are interested, because I've always felt that if part of my journey can help someone out there, then that makes me happy. Just like those of you that share your journeys with me, I take something from that. I learn from that and I grow from that. So if you read it and you find those little Easter eggs, let me know what you found as it relates to some of my other work and projects. I like hiding those things in there, but every bit helps. You know, the more pre-orders, the way Amazon's algorithm works, the pre-orders, then help them to promote it to other potential buyers, which is what I would love to get this book out there, because it really is just a fun project. Okay, I've beat that one up enough. I have some remote viewing news, some Reiki news. On the last show, I talked about Reiki, the benefits of Reiki, how I'm using Reiki, and how I'm offering Reiki sessions. If you want to book a Reiki session with me, sixthsensemedia.net/Reiki, all the details and information are there. I've gotten great results, great success, great feedback so far for those of you that have reached out and signed up. So thank you so very much. But check it out, sixthsensemedia.net/Reiki, and you can book a session with me for some Reiki treatments and some healing and some great discussion, hopefully. Some training opportunities coming up, hopefully by the summer as well, if you want to learn Reiki from me and the courses that I'm putting together. In addition to the Reiki, some remote viewing projects that are going to be coming out. Some of them have already been dropped. We just released the Conjuring of Philip. Dimmy threw this through a Hellfire group, and I'm going to do a video and a podcast on this as well, but it's already out there. It's live. This was an amazing experiment where a group of experimenters in the 70s created a fictional character, and they gave him so much intent and focus and energy that he became some kind of consciousness that was able to interact in a paranormal sense with them. And we were able to remote view Philip. And it was such a neat, meaningful experience for me. So I can't wait to dive into that data and you know, do some podcasts and some videos about what that experience was like as well. So Conjuring of Philip, that's already available through the Hellfire remote viewing page. What's that website there? I'm slipping tonight, friends. HellfireRV.com, all one word, HellfireRV.com. And you can find that project that was put together by Dimmy that's out there as well. So lots of homework, lots of cool things to check out. In addition, if you want to hear more of my conversations and my interviews that I've been doing through the Future Forecast podcast, you can find that on our YouTube channel. You can find it at futureforecastinggroup.com as well. Some great conversations that I've been having with a variety of intuitive people who share their process and their perceptions and you know, their thoughts and ideas. So it's been a lot of fun. So a lot of things out there to check out. There's been a lot that I've been involved in that I'm happy to share with all of you. But right now I'm most excited for promoting The Hive Part 2, Echoes of Existence and the Harmonic Resonance of Worlds. So you can find it at Amazon.com, sixthsensemedia.net/Hive 2. So as I'm drawing this podcast to a close, I'm going to share some of the highlights or the bullet points of a conversation I had with ChatGPT talking about AI and human society. And it tends to give very long answers. So I'm just going to give the bullet points here. But I asked it, what are the benefits of integrating AI with human society? And they gave descriptions of each one of these. I'm not going to read every description, but it talked about efficiency and automation, enhanced decision-making, innovation and creativity, personalized experiences. I'm going to expand on that one. AI algorithms can analyze user preferences and behaviors to deliver personalized recommendations and experiences, whether in entertainment, shopping, content consumption. It talks about healthcare advancements, improved safety and security, education and skill development, environmental monitoring and conservation, assistance for people with disabilities, and global connectivity. And that's what are the drawbacks. And again, the bullet point list, job displacement, bias, and fairness. It says here that AI systems can inherit and perpetuate biases present in the data they are trained on. This can lead to unfair and discriminatory outcomes, particularly in areas like hiring, criminal justice, and lending. So that's interesting, because that's what we talked about earlier in the show here, where I was talking about, well, can it just be black and white? But something that I've said previously in previous shows is that I think that AI is really a mirror reflection of our own humanity. So if we put there, everybody's afraid, you know, Skynet's going to take over. And if we create this AI that takes over the world and is mean and says all these horrible things and starts launching the missiles, right? Well, where's it learning from? It's learning from us. So is this really a self-reflection tool to learn about ourselves that could end up being like Pandora's box? But what are we opening? If we create an AI that thinks like humanity, then really it's just the stronger elements of ourselves that are evolving at a faster rate that are coming through, right? So where should we really be pointing the finger of danger here? We're so afraid of AI. That's why I said earlier, maybe we need to do that internal work on ourselves before we're responsible enough to handle something like an AI. Moving on, it talks about privacy concerns, ethical dilemmas, security risks, lack of transparency. It says many algorithms operate as black boxes, making it challenging to understand how they arrive at specific decisions. Lack of transparency can hinder accountability and trust in these systems. Interesting. We can develop a dependency of technology, social inequality, meaning they won't be distributed equally, which could change social equality. Be regulatory challenges, and it says existential risks. Some experts express concerns about the long-term impact of advanced systems, including the potential for unintended consequences and the loss of control over super intelligent systems. So we could definitely explore that thread. I'm not going to right now. So then I asked, how can AI impact free will? Talks about algorithmic determinism. AI systems, particularly those based on algorithms and machine learning, operate based on predefined rules and patterns derived from data. This deterministic nature can raise questions about whether human actions predicted or influenced by AI are truly free or if they're predetermined by algorithms. But I wonder that just in life in general, are we dealing with just an algorithm we can't see right now? And that's what I talk about with what I was talking about with the remote viewing. Like we remote view the future. Is that just based on algorithms and probabilities that we could change? It goes on, talks about behavioral prediction because of all the data that it can analyze. I did a show years ago now looking at, I think it was the LAPD using AI, looking, and it was just looking at vast amounts of data and patterns, and it was predicting things like, hey, there will be a car robbery or a carjacking within this vicinity on this date and time. And they were getting pretty accurate, much like a remote viewer, right? Nudging and persuasion. It can be used to design systems that influence human decision making through subtle nudges and pervasive techniques. I mean, let's just look at things like social media, how it's persuading people. It's got filter bubbles and echo chambers. So as algorithms and social media and content recommendation systems can create filter bubbles where individuals are exposed to information that aligns with their existing beliefs. It can limit exposure to diverse perspectives, potentially impacting the formation of independent opinions. And that we were seeing during 2020 as well, I think, with a lot of these problems out there of people saying, well, this is my belief system, and now everything they're being fed aligns with their thinking, which becomes that echo chamber, which becomes that resonance. It makes it stronger and stronger because you're getting all of this reinforcement, and you're not seeing enough of the other side presented in an unbiased way. Be a very dangerous thing, right? I want to learn. I want access to all perspectives so I can make my own conclusion as opposed to being just fed. And isn't that the problem that we've had throughout history, right? They gave you the Bible and that's all you were allowed to read. So that was your understanding of the world around you based on what you were had access to. Talks about autonomous systems, meaning decisions are made with machines without direct human intervention. I mean, we're seeing right now conversations in the war fighting realm. At what point are the machines going to have the decision to kill or not kill? Privacy and surveillance, that's a big one. You have ethical dilemmas and in autonomous vehicles. They have to make split-second decisions. Ethical dilemmas can arise. Bias and fairness and human AI collaboration. As humans increasingly collaborate with AI systems, there may be a blurring of the line between human decision-making and machine recommendations. This raises questions about the extent to which decisions are truly autonomous and free from external influence. And then there's legal and ethical frameworks as well. All right, so I asked another question here. What does the future with AI integrated into human society look like? And it talked about enhanced efficiency and productivity, improved healthcare, personalized experiences. We've talked about advanced education, innovative technologies, human AI collaboration, autonomous vehicle and smart cities, increased accessibility. There'll be ethical and regulatory frameworks and societal adaptation. So then I went on with my next question. Do you think it's possible to create a hive mind society through AI? And it first defined the hive mind. So the term hive mind typically refers to a collective consciousness or intelligence emerging from the collaboration of individuals. In the context of AI, this might involve interconnected systems or devices working together to form a unified cognitive entity. However, creating a true hive mind where individual consciousnesses merge into a singular shared consciousness. It is a highly speculative and ethical complex idea. It talked about ethical considerations, obviously, technical challenges, it would be difficult, individual diversity. True hive mind implies a significant loss of individuality as thoughts and experiences become shared or merged. Preserving and celebrating individual diversity is a fundamental aspect of many societies, and achieving a balance between collective cohesion and individual freedom would be a substantial challenge. Obviously, there's privacy concerns, and it talks about unintended consequences that we haven't foreseen yet, but misuse, manipulation, and unintended amplification of biases. All right, so then I said, does humanity lose anything if it became a hive mind collective? Well, it says we could lose individuality and personal autonomy. We could lose creativity and innovation, which is interesting because I experiment with some of these AI platforms in creating art, right? So I'm not an artist, I'm not a painter, but I can give it prompts to then have it create these things that really, if you look at my cover to the Hive 2, that is an AI designed cover. And it did awesome. I had this idea in my head and I gave it to AI and it was able to generate it. So I think that really enhanced my access to creative expression. Talks about personal privacy, which obviously would go away, emotional diversity, cultural and social diversity, learning from mistakes. And this is what I talked about earlier. Individuals learning often involves making mistakes and learning from them. In a hive mind, where thoughts and decisions are collective, the ability to learn from individual mistakes might be compromised. And I'd say it depends on how, I guess, the hive is structured. Freedom of thought and expression, a hive mind would limit that. Sense of self, right? Would we start to lose our sense of self? Would we put society over the self? Would that be a bad thing? Are we getting into like, well, that's communism? I don't know. what happens when we start to lose that? Adaptability and resilience. The ability of human societies to adapt to changing circumstances relies on diverse skills. You know, now we're getting into something though, like the Borg, right? In Star Trek, everybody, it absorbs everybody. So it all of a sudden has all that diversity. It has all that skill set, even though everybody looks the same and acts the same. They still have that understanding to help in their problem solving. I don't want to be the Borg, for the record. Okay, so lots of things to consider. I tried to give my human perspective, and I tried to give us somewhat of a perspective coming from ChatGPT, which is really just I don't want to say really just, it's this advanced AI chatbot, I guess. correct me if I'm wrong, those of you out there who know more about it than me, but there's a lot of things to think about here. And I don't know, as we get closer to that point, to that decision point in time, I hope that those of you that are interested, my work helps us to navigate that in making those choices that hopefully we have the choice and ability to make and decide, and it won't be made for us. Because we are in that time right now, friends, where society is changing quickly due to AI and technology. And I think we should be aware of it as we make those big choices. So that's it. That's my end of my long commercial. Hive Part 2, Echoes of Existence and the Harmonic Resonance of Worlds, sixthsensemedia.net/hive2. I'm Dennis Nappy II. This has been another episode of The Seeker Podcast, where small changes among the masses can have a massive impact around the world. I encourage you to be that change. Never stop questioning, keep an open mind, and let your intuition be your guide. Thank you.
I said, empty your mind. Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now water can flow, or it can crash. Be water, my friend. Be water, my friend. Water, my friend. water, my friend.